You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday the 8th of January 2026 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, I've been really looking forward to today because I can't wait to hear what my co-host Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson has to say about the kidnapping of President Maduro. Matt, good day, sir. How are you doing? I expect you're quite keen to get talking about this as well, aren't you?
Absolutely, yeah. And you know, this was an extremely unexpected thing. But I've uncovered some information that suggests why this happened, and we'll get into that here, or I should say how it happened, how it was able to be, you know, be successful, the entire operations. We'll get into that here very, very, very soon.
It really did seem to come right out of the blue. I mean, there had been rumblings about things going on in Venezuelan waters and going after fishing boats and coming up with flimsy excuses. And I thought it was just going to carry on like that. I had no idea that they would just go in and kidnap the democratically elected president of Venezuela. Well, the article that we have today that we're going to use for our notes comes from Global Research. And it's entitled Nicolas Maduro in New York, China in the Crosshairs. Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro has been abducted by Delta Force and is already on US soil. Many commentators have rushed to publish articles explaining what happened, or more accurately, how they interpret the latest developments. What has taken place constitutes a major challenge to the BRICS countries, and above all to China, which unsettled the West, and especially the United States, with the military parade it staged last year. And it seems even some mainstream commentators are saying that's what this is about. It's about going after the BRICS countries and the threat that they pose to America, more so than Venezuela. And we're going to get into that today. And we're going to get into China's links to Venezuela. But, I mean, I'm not so certain that America was unsettled by China's military parade that it staged last year. I do know that the American military parade was a bit of a joke and the soldiers couldn't even march in step. But I think America has shown that it has the weaponry that can still take on these other countries. So, Matt, do you think America was really unsettled by the military parade? And what are China's links to Venezuela?
Well, I think both China and Russia, because they have the hypersonics, the U.S. does not, is a big humiliation to the U.S., to the West. That's a Russian creation. You can't shoot those down. They were used with great effect in Ukraine. I think, you know, the U.S. would struggle. You know, the supply issues, the corruption in the Pentagon, the U.S. would struggle to maintain a war more than a few months. It's not the U.S. of the Vietnam War. And now as far as China is concerned, well, you know, Venezuela can trade with whoever they want. But the U.S. has surrounded both China and Russia with military bases and overthrowing governments to create enemies. Venezuela went to them when Chavez was elected, and it's been extremely lucrative. How that's a problem, you know, it's a problem because the U.S. makes it a problem. This is what liberalism is. This is what liberalism does. You know, and I thought I was starting to sour on BRICS there for a while after the meeting last year. But now, you know, this is a threat. The Belt and Road, especially. So, you know, if the U.S. were consistent, if the U.S. wasn't an empire, it would be one thing. But the U.S. has these bases everywhere. And because of that, you know, they can only use a small portion of their forces at any given moment. Unfortunately, you know, Latin America is very, very close to the U.S. So this is one place where they can stage things like what happened. And sanctions can actually work. It failed in China and Russia. It does work in Latin America because, you know, the U.S. is by far the number one trading partner.
Well, I guess America sees Venezuela as its backyard. It's within its sphere of influence. So to have them doing deals with China and Russia instead of doing deals with America, that's going to be seen as a threat to America. And I think also what this does is it sends a message to other South American countries that if they start doing deals with China and Russia instead of doing deals with America, then the same thing could happen to them. And I believe something similar has been said about the president of Colombia, even. Getting on to the next quote here, what has unfolded in Venezuela also represents a complete collapse of any notion of law and morality. Even for the United States itself, these actions were carried out without congressional approval, as required by the US Constitution, according to an article published by the New York Times. And they violate US law in relation to what was done and, quote, continues to be done, close quote. In Venezuela. Well, besides the fact that he should have told Congress, or so we are being told here, over here in Britain, we keep hearing about how this is a violation of international law. As far as I'm aware, America is not signed up to the International Court, the same court that the UN keeps saying that Israel has to go along to. Because international law is just treaties between countries. And if one country doesn't have a treaty with another country, you can't then say, oh, they've broken international law. And I don't think America does sign up to these treaties. So that would be my first question, Matt. I mean, and the second question is, obviously, can you expand on how he was able to do this without consulting the US Constitution? So is America actually signed up to any international treaties that would prevent them from doing something like this?
Well, I mean, the main one would be the UN Charter, which, you know, puts national sovereignty at the center. But that's nothing new for the U.S. There's about 150 treaties between Venezuela and the U.S., sometimes including other countries, rarely touching on anything like this. But I never make international law arguments. Especially, you know, when it's, you know, at the UN, it's unenforceable. Unfortunately, it's the will of the stronger. You know, Trump doesn't care about international law. Who's going to enforce it? So people talk about illegal. And I laugh. I said, well, illegal. It's not like, you know, you shoot somebody in New York City. This is that's not, international relations isn't done that way. So you don't have any specific treaties dealing with kidnapping. Actually, you do have three or four treaties that Venezuela signed up to about fighting the narcos, narco terrorism, and how strong these groups have become. And they have been fairly successful in smashing the cocaine distribution, the small amount that actually is in the country. They've been. You know, this is not suited for cocaine growing or distribution, the nature of the country. You know, they come up through Mexico or through the Pacific. There's four or five of those. And when Chavez, who was a military man, don't forget, was elected, you know, and his whole movement was vehemently anti-cartel, anti-drug. They wanted nothing to do with them, and they fought them. I mean, if you could just look it up and see the victories over you know, cartels in various parts of Latin America. But Venezuela never was in that part of the never was in that life If anything, they're a minuscule player. It's not like it's Colombia or Mexico. They've never had to fight the, or Peru for that matter. So as far as treaties goes, the only treaties that matter here are the three or four that they've signed, declaring war on, drug cartels.
So you think that's the charge, that they haven't been sufficiently fighting against the drug cartels, and therefore they are breaking those treaties, and therefore they can then take President Maduro and put him on trial in America? Because I guess the other point to raise here is American law doesn't apply in Venezuela. How can they try him under American law for breaking American laws if he's in Venezuela? So I think that really sort of implies that it is to do with these treaties, Matt, and that America thinks that he's not sufficiently fighting against narco-terrorism. Now, you are saying that it's not suited for growing cocaine and it's not suited for the distribution network there in Venezuela, but could it be used for money laundering? Could that be what's going on here, do you think?
You know, in my endless research on this, it hasn't come up. It's the nature of this government. Frankly, you know, so money laundering, it's conceivable, but not at the top levels. And even if there were, it would be only because of American sanctions. You know, it's like the drug money keeping the U.S. stock market alive when it crashes. It's true. The U.N. says that. The U.N. Office on Drugs and Crime says that. But it's certainly not at the top levels. And Maduro absolutely has no interest in destroying his own country with this stuff. He never threatened the U.S. This kidnapping is absolutely bizarre. It's sort of like, it's like a compromise between an invasion and doing nothing. But what struck me about it was the fact that, you know, Venezuela is a powerful military force, and they did nothing. I don't know how the defense minister, Lopez, still has a job, unless, of course, he was in on it, and I happen to think he was in on it.
Well,
At least he stood down.
Well, I think that's sort of being implied by the mainstream media as well. I saw an interview by Beverly Turner, and she's from GB News, and she's from Britain, but she's amongst Trump's entourage. And she was saying that they've been talking about this through back channels for weeks now, and it was all arranged. That's why it was so easy for them to just go in there and pick him up, because he knew they were going to get to him one way or another. So I guess what he did was he avoided there being bloodshed, really, and attacks, and allowed himself to be taken off to America to avoid that, which is quite a good thing, which explains why there wasn't any resistance to it. I guess almost in the same way as what happened with Syria's Bashar al-Assad. And he knew that he was going, and he went, and it just sort of happened. And it's the same sort of thing that's happened here. Getting back to the quotes, in a way, it all began with the invasion of Iraq in 2003 and later Libya, developments that opened the door not only for Putin, but also for Trump. Now, I think there is a parallel between this and Putin, because Putin's main reason for going into Ukraine is because he did not want NATO in the country next door, or the EU. And America does not want China and Russia in the country next door either. So America has gone in and taken out the leader of the country. Again, this is different to what Putin's done in Ukraine. Putin, I think, just wanted to secure the parts of the country that had Russian speakers in it, that were of the Russian ethnicity, and he didn't actually go for the leader of the country. And there has been a lot of bloodshed since then. Whereas what Trump has done is he's taken out the leader of the country. He hasn't actually assassinated him, but he's kidnapped him and taken him to America. And arguably, that is a better way of doing things, really, because it's saved all this bloodshed, or at least it has saved all this bloodshed so far. So I definitely think there is parallels here between the reason for Putin going into Ukraine and the reason for Trump going into Venezuela. Only they've both gone about it in different ways. And arguably, Trump's way is actually superior if you think about the loss of life that's been involved in what's happened in Ukraine. What are your thoughts on that, Matt?
Well, as far as it goes, you're correct. The only problem is American exceptionalism. America has surrounded Russia and China with bases, tried to overthrow their governments over and over and over and over and over again. It you know, wants security on its border or close to its border. But Russia and China be damned. You know, they're going to be surrounded by American allies, which has been only partially successful. As I said in the beginning, this is somewhere in between an invasion, which the U.S. cannot do, and doing nothing. It's a compromise. But beyond the simple bloodshed issue, well, I think, I don't know if the U.S. You know, the U.S. would have a tough time in Venezuela. In one of my papers on Maduro, you know, even from the Chavez era, they've been buying tremendous amounts of materiel from both countries, Russia and China, to build up its military. It's the strongest military in Latin America. It is the best protected military in Latin America. I don't want anyone to think that this is due to American military superiority. It's due to the fact that the vice president, especially Rodriguez, made a deal. And made a deal some time ago, along possibly with Lopez. I mean, I don't know how Lopez could be out of it. He shouldn't even have a job. Under normal circumstances, you know, they would have blown those planes out of the sky. But, you know, Delcy Rodriguez's brother, Jorge, held talks with the U.S. in 2025. And to have his sister lead a post-Maduro provisional government. The only difference was they wanted Maduro to go into exile rather than being arrested. The Venezuelan military, Lopez himself, announced that it would recognize Rodriguez as the acting president just for the sake of peace and normality. And what's worse, as far as Maduro is concerned, his son was on board, Nicolas Maduro Guerrero. So that means his closest allies, including his own son, turned on him. And that's got to be a crushing thing for him psychologically.
I guess you could also say, well, at least he wasn't assassinated. Israel would just go out and assassinate the leader of Hezbollah in Lebanon, and America has assassinated General Soleimani from Iran. And Trump hasn't assassinated Maduro. He's taken him into court. And of course, there's all this subversion that you were referring to there, Matt. And this goes back a long way. I can remember doing podcasts with you about Juan Guaido, who America announced was the real president of Venezuela. Yeah. And of course, he's no longer there. They did the same thing in Belarus. They said that Svetlana, I think her name was, I can't remember her second name. They said that she was the real president of Belarus.
Yeah.
It's the same playbook, but this is new, kidnapping the leader of a country. This is doing something different, which I know I'm sort of coming across as trying to find the positive points in what Trump has done here, but these things do have to be weighed up, everything that's gone on before in Venezuela with what's going on now. Back to the quotes. For a long time, Trump has accused Maduro of leading a drug trafficking network, an allegation Maduro himself has vehemently denied. And yet Trump recently granted a pardon to Juan Hernandez, president of Honduras, from 2014 to 2022, despite the fact that Hernandez was running a drug operation while he was in office. You see, all of these things, it says that this is not about drugs and that's just being used as an excuse. And it really says that America can use these laws in ways that they weren't originally intended just to get what they want. In a way, it's similar to the way that Britain now uses these hate speech laws. It's not about protecting minorities from violence. It's about silencing people that are criticizing the government. And this is not about protecting America from drugs. It's about stopping Venezuela from being full of Chinese and Russian interests. And they're just using this law because it's convenient. And I think the fact that he's let the president of Honduras off, I mean, it's basically saying that he cannot be serious about this. It's almost like what Michael Hoffman referred to as the revelation of the method, when they right. are so obvious about what they're doing, because they can be obvious, and it's like sort of rubbing your nose in it, basically, that they can just do this and get away with it. What do you think, Matt?
Well, it's actually, that's a pretty good comparison. Revelation of the method. It's an old Masonic conception that once they've received a certain amount of power, they can actually become more public. It's a gamble, but if people don't do anything, then their power has increased massively. And that's exactly what's happened. But there are no, I mean, if you're worried about drugs, the last country you would go to would be Venezuela. The Cartel de los Soles is the Cartel of the Sun doesn't exist. It's largely a fiction. It's kind of a mishmash of both TV and cartels in Mexico. As we talked about before we came on, I was reading his indictment from 2020. And it's the exact same thing. So this is nothing new here. And he even includes the Sinaloa cartel. Sinaloa is Mexican, number one. And number two, the U.S. has supported the Sinaloa cartel. So, you know, why that would be thrown in there? That's kind of shooting until they hit something, I guess. They said the same thing about Chavez, actually. There's minimal. I mean, of course, there's going to be some corruption and some drugs, you know, like anywhere. But compared to Colombia or Peru, it doesn't exist on a, it's a blip on the radar screen. You know, to say that he wanted to flood the U.S. with cocaine, and inflict its addictive effects to users on this country, that's what it says, right? You know, at least according to the Miami Herald, that's about the last thing on his mind. You know, and none of this would have, you know, there was no reason to be enemies with Russia or China or Maduro. The only reason they did what they did in nationalizing their oil was to keep the U.S. away because they were predatory. If they handled this in a rational way going back decades, it wouldn't have been a huge problem. But that's not how liberalism works. That's not the idea of empire, American exceptionalism. Not to mention, just keep in mind, Maduro was extremely anti-Israel. You're right. He could have just killed them. In fact, it's a miracle he wasn't killed, because they did shoot up the place where he was staying. The CIA was on his tail quite a bit. So I wonder, you know, Venezuela's intelligence services have clearly dropped the ball. Everyone dropped the ball. It seems like they're quite willing to sacrifice him, the elites in Venezuela, including his own son and his allies, to betray him and in exchange have some semblance of normality. But there is no normality with the U.S. You know, when Trump said that we're going to run the country, which was a ludicrous idea, he was talking about his vice president, who, you know, Chavez then never trusted, but Maduro did. So he's been betrayed by everyone around him. But no, there is no drug trafficking as a matter of official policy in Caracas.
Getting back to the quotes here, Delta Force pulled him out of bed, blindfolded him, and shackled his hands. He then spent the following night in prison in Brooklyn, New York. Yes, of course, Maduro, who began his life as a bus driver, is an unrestrained strongman and a tyrant. But what also took place is unacceptable. And to me, looking at Maduro, I mean, he's a giant of a man. But he looks quite gentle to me. He doesn't look like the sort that's going to be a bully. I mean, he just looks like a normal bloke to me when I look at him. And you hear here that he began his life as a bus driver, but managed to make his way all the way up to the top. That's quite an achievement. So he's obviously got a lot of drive there, a lot of self-confidence to actually do that. And also he's got ability in order to do that. And the fact that everybody is now stabbing him in the back, I think really says a lot more about the people that he surrounded himself with. Now, I know you've spoken positively yeah. about him in the past, Matt. So give us a description of Maduro's rise to power and what he's been like to the actual Venezuelan people, what they think of him.
Well, I disagree, of course, with this writer's concept of him being a tyrant. This guy's been reading too many mainstream sources. He was legitimately elected. He has a huge, you know, coming, you know, as Chavez's, you know, as Chavez was dying, he publicly said, "I want Maduro to be my replacement." There was no question about that. You're right. He was born into poverty. He was a bus driver for a while, and he ran for office. He became Chavez's foreign minister. So he's extremely well-versed in international relations. And then threw his hat in the ring for president, and he won. But in other words, he got the blessing from Chavez, and a blessing from Chavez means that he is going to win. Of course, the other issue here, other than drugs, is that he wasn't legitimately elected. But there were no, you know, there were plenty of international observers at the recent elections. His elections over the years, and there was no problem other than minor issues. It's not like Biden. He's not an unrestrained strongman in a time. But even if he were, that would be only because of the threats and the sanctions on the country from the U.S. These Republicans, they'll talk about how socialism, and I think he's a national socialist like Chavez was, is a failure because of Venezuela. Well, you've choked the country off. And, you know, they use in the 2020 indictment, they use the fact that he was foreign minister and at one time, you know, landed in various airports in the U.S. as legitimate reason to bring him to an American court, which doesn't work. At all, but he's not. I don't think he's ever going to go home. I think he's finished. I would be shocked if he. Let's put it this way: he may quote unquote kill himself.
It's going to be difficult for him to get a fair trial, I think. Is it the judge that's presiding over the trial, or the prosecutor that is a 97-year-old Jewish prosecutor? I read. 97 years old, and he's obviously. Do you know who I mean?
I do not know who you mean, but because he has been, Maduro has been so anti-Israel, as has Chavez in the past. He's had many, I mean, long before the Gaza thing. You know, Netanyahu was the first person to call and congratulate Trump on his wonderful mission. Yeah, that's extremely important to know. The Israelis wanted him out as much as the Americans. Yeah, it's part of why they're it's a popular group. You know, his opponents have not been bus drivers. His opponents have been the wealthy elite, including, unfortunately, his vice president, who has, how do you put it, has rubbed shoulders with the wealthy elite. Fedecámaras is the name of essentially their Bilderberg. And in 2021, Rodriguez went there and was a part of it. It's just a conference of oligarchs, which would suggest, you know, making him her vice president is outrageous. You know, oh, we need the private sector, we need corporate engagement and all of this stuff. Chavez would never have permitted that. So, you know, it's beyond, you know, it's beyond doubt. I mean, it's completely certain now that the wealthy, all of these groups have simply sacrificed him. And I'm not so sure that normality is ever going to come to Venezuela, because they're going to end up, the next move is to purge the bureaucracy of followers of Chavez, like they did in Iraq, followers of Saddam Hussein, which is just, you know, again, the U.S. has absolutely no right to do. But prior to the sanctions, Chavez's economic, with the same policies, Chavez's economic record is extraordinary. You know how many times I've come on here and I've said a country's on the cusp of the first world, and that's why, and it's only that way because of a national socialist style system or a social nationalist system. Well, it's the exact same thing here. The whole Chavismo movement, of which, of course, Maduro is a big part, is very, very, very popular, especially in the countryside. So this whole thing, this is just the fact that Lopez still has a job. I guarantee you, your average Venezuelan is wondering, or probably knows, that he was in on it. What was the point of buying all that military equipment just to let all this happen? It's just, I'm stuck on that. You know, he should have been fired immediately, but now he's going to be part of the new oligarchy that the U.S. is going to depend on to run the country.
Well, you say that Bibi Netanyahu was one of the first to congratulate him. Nathaniel Rothschild also very publicly congratulated Donald Trump with a tweet. And I think that's quite telling as well, because as far as I'm aware, Venezuela did not have a central bank, obviously linked to the Rothschilds. And if they didn't have a central bank, like Iraq didn't have a central bank, Syria didn't have a central bank, North Korea doesn't have one, Libya didn't have one. And reading that, I'm sort of wondering, well, what was the banking system like there that they had, Matt? Do you know anything about the banking that they were doing there? Obviously,
well, I'm no expert, but the countries that you listed all had central banks, but not controlled by private investors. I love the fact that in Burma, the central bank is controlled by a general with economics training. No, it was controlled by the state.
So that's what that means, then. It means it's controlled by the state, not linked up to the central bank system.
Precisely, yes.
And I guess they would have been dealing with the Shanghai Cooperation Bank as well, with the BRICS countries.
Yeah, I tend to lean towards the Shanghai Cooperation Organization even more than BRICS. BRICS is starting to not make a lot of sense to me. These countries have nothing in common. What is South Africa doing there? I can see the Russia-China nexus. They're the main ones, which is what Shanghai is. But now you're bringing in countries from all over the place. They're not part of the Axis of Resistance. I just got an email from a friend of mine about that, saying, "What, you know, BRICS is getting so large, and even the Brazilian government is not part of the Axis of Resistance. Russia and China are. Pakistan is." And so I tend to lean toward now. The SCO is a security organization. BRICS is more economics leaning, but they're very different from each other. And they put out something. I mean, clearly they're a threat. This is a huge part of what happened. But last year at their meeting, they put out their report that was very, very weak. And I talked about that on Daily Nationalist too. is very upsetting. I mean, you could read between the lines, but that's what happens when you just add countries from all over the place that have nothing in common. The SCO is much smaller. Venezuela was an observer. But no one really talks about the SCO anymore. They'll talk about BRICS now. I think maybe for good reason. There was a few observers. I got Turkey was an observer. So BRICS, remember, this whole movement, the Chavismo movement, was going to build an entire banking system for the third world with the U.S. out. The U.S. wasn't going to stand for that. It's a huge part of the de-dollarization movement run by Russia and China. The axis of resistance is, Iran, Russia, China, a few countries in Central Asia, North Korea, regardless of what you think of the system there, Venezuela, maybe a handful of other places, Kazakhstan, definitely, and that's the main, it used to be Syria. Now Syria has no government whatsoever. But as far as the banking system goes, it was under state control, and it was partially under state control to avoid it being used as money laundering, working with drug pushers. The fact is, as I've already said, the U.S. Stock market, when things go bad, the only liquidity they could depend on is drug money. That's been said many times by many mainstream people. That's the only reason why the U.S. came out of 2008. They really didn't come out of 2008, but the crash of 2008 was the drug cartels constantly laundering huge amounts of money. The U.S. can't defeat the cartels. It has no intention of defeating the cartels. And it condemns any country that has defeated their drug cartels. El Salvador, and the Philippines. Anytime these guys get smashed, anytime these guys are, rendered totally neutralized, the U.S. condemns it. So, we've got to talk about the pardon of the Honduran and everything else. There's simply too much money there. But a bank under central control, and when Chavez was in power under military control, is far more protected. And if things go sour in the U.S., the bank won't be affected. Just like in 1997 with the Soros meltdown of East Asia, only the countries with the state-controlled central bank survived it. They were fine. Because, there was a run on the banks everywhere, but you don't have a run on the banks in a state-controlled system.
Well, there's been a lot of condemnation from elsewhere in the world about this. French President Emmanuel Macron spoke of a significant development. The Prime Minister of Greece said much the same, even adding that this was not the appropriate moment to comment on the legality of the intervention. One is left to wonder, do these two truly grasp what is unfolding? All of this also reveals Trump's deeper intentions. He does not want China to emerge as the dominant power in Panama, Venezuela, or the broader region. Trump is an unusual president, one who can now claim, I removed him from power and he is still alive, and he did not meet the fate of Saddam Hussein or Muammar Gaddafi. And I think that is a good point. And he also didn't invade the country like Russia did to Ukraine. Any thoughts here on what these other world leaders have to say about this, Matt?
Well, they didn't say very much. They're being very careful in their words. I haven't read. I mean, it just has two words here, significant development. Well, it certainly is. It's changed a lot of things. The U.S. is, as you've already mentioned, the revelation of the method. The U.S. is fully admitting it's an empire that can do what it wants. They did the same thing in Romania. They could arrest whoever they please, even though they're not Americans. They're not under American law. But I don't think they do grasp what's unfolding, what the most politicians want. If they can do that to him, then any opponent of the U.S. can be met with the same fate. I don't think Maduro is not going to leave that prison. I don't think there's any chance of a fair trial. The only thing possible, as I've already mentioned, is that his vice president had wanted him to go into exile, which still doesn't change the fact that they kidnapped a legitimate leader. And the U.S. did that in Ukraine. They didn't kidnap him, but they financed a huge riot against him. You know, tomato, tomato, really. But not wanting China to emerge as dominant power, you know, the only reason that they were there is because of the hostility of the U.S. towards their system. China doesn't have to be an enemy of the U.S. Russia doesn't have to be an enemy. The neocons who run American foreign policy have invented in their minds, in their imagination, these tyrannies that actually don't exist. They've made enemies. They've created them as enemies. It doesn't have to be this way, but the U.S. is certainly trying to be dominant on the borders of Russia and China, and loses it when any pro-Chinese or pro-Russian government is elected. Yeah, they get this through. If they simply arrested the guy in Romania who won, it's outrageous. You know, you can't have it both ways. I'm fully aware that the U.S. has legitimate hegemonic interests. But you can't do that if you're surrounding other countries with enemies and financing their opposition. Without the U.S., without USAID, these opposition parties wouldn't exist. All of their leaders are educated in America. They all speak English better than they do their own language. I've written on this so many times. I feel like I'm just, you know, they're all educated. And actually, his vice president was educated in Paris. Like Navalny, educated in the U.S. He knows the U.S. better than Russia. All of these people, they have no connection really to their country. And certainly the chief oligarch, Morena, who won the stupid peace prize for some reason, even though she wants an invasion of her own country, was educated in the West. You know, this is going to happen one way or, I could agree with you and say that the kidnapping was better than an invasion, but the U.S. does not have the capacity to invade Venezuela. It would have been, the U.S. would have lost. The fact that air defense and intelligence has been waiting for something like this for a while, and they still did nothing. I'll never forget this. They were in on it, and that's the worst part of it. But remember, you know, Venezuela doesn't have just oil; they have lithium, they have gold, they have rare earth minerals. I mean, a small amount. And it was that General Laura Richardson was always put in quotes, who was the commander of the U.S. Southern Command, who used to direct the U.S. military operation in the Caribbean around Venezuela. She came right out and said, here's the reason why. Resources were a huge part of it. And these resources, most of them were under state control, precisely to keep them out of American hands. But the hostility of the U.S. towards Venezuela is a reason that they had no choice but to go to the Chinese or the Russians for their military equipment. And you know, the Chinese reaction, you know, and they're just, the Chinese reaction to all this has been quite muted. It's all, you know, it's in very diplomatic language. And I hate diplomatic language, but that's, you know, the good thing about Donald Trump is that he just says what's on his mind, regardless if it's crazy or not. He just comes out with it. He doesn't speak like a diplomat. He doesn't speak like a politician. You know, he speaks like you would expect a New York real estate developer to speak.
Well, China, however, is the clear loser. It has taken a significant hit. Beijing relied on Venezuelan crude oil, extended massive loans, and carried out major infrastructure projects there, only to be confronted with the reality that American power remains unshakable, whether exercised through diplomacy or through the use of force. The United States, of course, also wants to reclaim the assets of major American corporations that were seized by Caracas in the past, and quite plainly to turn a profit as well. America needs Venezuela's largest proven oil reserves as well as its gold and lithium. The United States needs that wealth right in its own neighborhood to flow on to the New York Stock Exchange and indirectly to help reduce the fiscal deficit when spending exceeds federal revenues and the national debt continues to grow. So again, I mean, that does make sense that he wants American companies to be dealing with all of these resources rather than his opponents from over the other side of the world. I mean, what do you make of this bit here, Matt?
Well, again, Venezuela can do as they please. They're a sovereign nation under Chavez, run better than U.S. was. Clearly, this is the reason the U.S. didn't, I'm sorry, the Venezuelans didn't nationalize American oil concerns, but only after the sanctions were put on it. You know, sort of like, you know, they're trying to take the Russian reserves that are held in Western Europe. So Russia starts nationalizing whatever is left of Western concerns in Russia. That's simply what they're doing. It's a tit-for-tat kind of thing, and they simply don't want, you know, Putin's whole career in Russia has been built on keeping the U.S. out of its oil fields. That would destroy its sovereignty. And he's right to say this in the sense that the U.S. is beyond broke, doesn't have any sense of morality, doesn't have any social cohesion. You're talking about a debt in the 32 trillion. Interest on the debt is, I think, the number two after Social Security, and I think I even wonder about that. Biggest issue in the budget. So much money is being poured into interest. A lot of that going to China, by the way. And the U.S. now needs to it's in a panic. It's like a cornered animal. What are they going to do? It isn't just Donald Trump. It's his team. It's everybody. It's the neocons in Washington that have been demanding this for a very long time. But they were seized by Caracas because of sanctions on their country. It wasn't just done for no reason.
Well, for many Americans, Trump is a great leader. For others, he is not. Perhaps with Trump in the White House, the world is returning to something like the era of the Roman Empire, with a dash of Cold War. The Monroe Doctrine is in the air as the US returns to Latin America to restore its prestige. The MAGA movement and the president himself, with his enormous ego, Dr. Ego. At the same time, international law cannot be overridden in this manner, because doing so harms weaker countries and vulnerable citizens. The next stop for Delta Force and the CIA will be Greenland, again under cover of night, to keep China away from America's backyard. The United States has no intention of handing the scepter to China for the next 100 years. China's power already dealt a severe blow by what has happened and what is to come in Venezuela, and the effectiveness of Delta Force, the CIA, the NSA, and the US Armed Forces in an operation involving a fleet of ships and 150 aircraft that left the world in awe is a sharp jab straight at Beijing's elite. Why? Because China is the target of Trumpian nationalism. It is the real boss controlling 25% of the global economy, and it is using Nicolas Maduro as the medium. The geopolitical stakes could not be higher. And that's the real reason for this is China. It's a way to get at China. What are your final thoughts on all of this today, Matt?
Well, let me reprise it here. This is not a credit to Delta Force or the CIA. They would have been destroyed if the military was not hadn't made a deal, if the vice president hadn't made a deal, and Maduro's own son making a deal. That's the only reason they stood down. You know, this is actually what Trump is doing is a violation of the Monroe Doctrine. These are supposed to be about, I read the Monroe Doctrine. This is about independent, maintaining independent countries in Latin America. It was aimed at Western European colonialists. And you know, the U.S. certainly wasn't going to just reverse that. America First, this is the opposite of that. So, you know, he needs to shut up with this, you know, leave the world in awe, this nonsense. But like it or not, China is the largest economy in the world. If you use purchasing power parity, they actually make things. They do have a strong sense of racial nationalism. And they've defeated the U.S. in many ways. It didn't have to be that way. But thanks to outsourcing, et cetera, it is that way. The U.S. created this situation, not the Chinese and not the Venezuelans.
Well, I think more than the Monroe Doctrine, I think people need to look at the national security document, which we discussed a couple of weeks back, Matt. I mean, it outlines it in there, what America is going to do and how important the American sphere of influence is to America. I think really he's just carrying out what he said he was going to carry out, although it is in a way that was completely unexpected. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion. Talk Radio for the nationalist community.